Welcome to the next episode of HYOH Podcast, podcast about hammock camping and much more. As always, thanks for listening and supporting the podcast. Life gets busy. I wonder sometimes if anybody's listening. It seems every time I get unsure, there's always one of you, kind of quite out of the blue, helps me remember why I do this, and for that, I thank all of you. This month, I chat with Calvin Fenton, owner of Yobo Gear and inventor of the Cricket Stand. Very creative guy. Really enjoyed this chat with him. Hope you enjoy too.
So how you been?
Great. How have you been?
Oh, keeping busy. It's the winter is my busy season, and now I'm just coming off busy season now. I think I could get a couple weeks break, but now I have to do all kinds of things I've been avoiding all.
Yeah, you'll have that. Well, congratulations on your daughter's success and everything she's been doing. That's great.
Yeah, thank you. It's a lot of work. Can't be more proud of her. She's the visually impaired para-alpine national champion. So that's hard to say. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it's, like I said, that's incredibly brave.
Yeah, we've been doing it for years. She went blind when she was six. She probably went blind earlier, but we didn't know it. And she's so young, she didn't know how to describe it to us. But anyways, then it took us a few years to figure out what she wanted to do. And she was just had an aptitude to skiing. And so we just kept at it. She's built up for many, many years now. Now she's going to be a racer in college. So not only is she national champion, but she was the 22nd fastest alpine girl, able-bodied, in the state.
Nice.
She beat all but 22 girls. So
yeah.
What was really neat is at the end, she really got kind of a following with all the other girls, and other schools are rooting her on, saying, go. I mean, it was just the coolest thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of funny. I don't know what other... Nobody let it bother them, but they're like, how did you let a blind girl? And they're like, she's really good.
That's great.
So you've been keeping busy?
Oh, yeah. Been really busy.
You've been working on some sculptures, or you've been working on the new stands, or what you've been working on?
Yeah, all of that. I got, lots of things coming up for Yobo Gear, and then the sculptures have been busy. So got lots of fun things happening.
I guess we could start there. How did you start Yobo?
I started on an elk hunting trip, and I decided to take hammocks. And I'm the kind of person, like, when I go, I'll walk 30 miles a day and just keep going and going and going and going. And then I brought hammocks, and I was like, oh, we'll go out in the morning. And then I just come out and just hang out all day in my hammock. And it's like, man, do I got to go out at night again? I mean, And then, like, typically when you're out like that, like pushing like as hard as I usually hunt, it's about 3-4 days you start feeling pretty run down. And so it's like day seven just hanging out in these hammocks, and I didn't even want to go home. It's like I could have easily stayed there a whole month. And then of course all that time in a hammock, you're like, well, wouldn't it be cool if you could like do this everywhere? It's like, because we're in Wyoming, we don't have like trees. And then it turned into, wow, well, it would be nice to hang out in the house and then also have something that you could take with you really easily. So it just kind of evolved from there.
Well, it's pretty creative of you. I mean, I've seen your stands, and I'm like, I don't know whether you're good at math or engineering or you're just good at figuring things out, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, honestly, I don't think it has anything to do with me personally. It's just kind of innate. It's just what came to me. I'm not an engineer or anything. It's just something I enjoy doing. I put it out there and what I wanted, and that's what came back to me. So it's like, all right, let's follow it through and see where it goes. And
yeah, I talked to Barry, who's a guy from New Orleans. I'm trying to think of what his handle is. I can't think of it. He says he loves his. I mean, he showed some pictures, was it yesterday or the day before? He says The only problem he has is if it gets windy and you don't have it guy lying down, sometimes it'll blow over a little bit. Talks about how light it is, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's just how light it is. I mean, that's the thing. It's like a lot of people say, well, you got to stake your hammock stand down anyway, so you might as well just have one that stakes down all the time. And it's like, no. It's like, I don't want to have to look for anchors inside my house, and I If I'm at the beach, I don't want to have to worry about staking it down every time. I only want to stake it down when I need it staked. And then when you do have to stake it down, literally all you have to, if you have a tarp on it, all you have to do is stake out your tarp. You don't have to stake out anchors and worry about it holding your weight. Mm-hmm. I mean, it'll hold your weight just to hold it in place, just stake your tarp out to the sides. I mean, it's just nice.
Yeah. And so I think the last time we talked, you're working on I would assume it's an aluminum version. Is that what you said?
Well, these are all aluminum.
Oh, they're all aluminum.
Yeah,
for some reason, I thought they were carbon fiber. I've never seen one in person.
No. I've been holding off on carbon fiber. It's just, I'm just trying to stick with recyclable materials. Like,
well, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to get things like ridiculously light, I could easily, and I'll probably do it just to do it. I can easily build the lightest freestanding hammock that's ever been built. Like, I figured it up like a while back. I'm pretty sure I can build one that's about 3.5 pounds that requires no staking. And it'll still hold 300 pounds. Patented. So I'm pretty sure nobody else can come up with a way to do it better or lighter.
No, it's very cool. Everybody that I know that has one, I know a few that they just love it. Kudos to you, my brother.
Well, like I said, it wasn't like all me. It's just what came to me. And it's like, I kind of feel like ideas are just floating around there. And if you are the one that brings them to life, great. If you're not, they just go on to the next person. So I don't feel like I can take any credit besides just it came to me and I brought it to life instead of ignoring it. Like, tons of people have like amazing ideas. They just never follow them through.
Yeah, that's the trick, and that's, again, kudos on you. Is, you know, people will do sketches, they'll come up with ideas for all kinds of things. The difference between you and most people is you did something.
Yeah, and I wish more people would, because it's like I've seen so many people and heard so many people. It's like, oh, I thought of that 10, 15 years ago. It's like, well, you let it go, and it wasn't your idea. It just went on to somebody else, and that's what it does. It just goes on to somebody else and somebody else and somebody else until it gets brought to life, and then that's where its life begins, and that person gets credit for it. It's like Einstein said that, and he's like, I try to figure something out 99 times, and I can't do it. As soon as I quit trying, that's when it comes. See, I feel like the idea finds you instead of you find the idea.
Yeah, I think we have to redefine success. I mean, you can go back to Edison. He tried and tried and tried, and you know, whatever the number was, you know, everyone could say he's a failure. He goes, nope, I know I'm successful. I know 99 ways that don't work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then in the end, it worked. I did that years ago. I learned my lesson is, I forget what it was. And I don't think some of these things, I don't think, I'm like, I can't be the only person that's thought of this, because it seems so obvious to me that someone had to come up with it. So this probably was 20, 25 years ago. I thought of the automatic replenishment system where people could, at the time, no one's done this part, but the rest of it got done, is I was going to put a little scanner, because everything had a barcode, so that when you go use something, like you're cooking, you open a can or you whatever, you scan it, and it would have a couple of buttons right there. Do you want another one, or do you not want to replace it? And then it would link with your computer so that you could do a review that you liked it. I'm saying, so all the time was just happening. So this was before Amazon was a big deal, and everything was coming to people's houses. And I said, wouldn't it be cool if you just set it up, and then things ended up on your porch. You didn't have to go anywhere for toilet paper. You didn't have to go anywhere for refried beans. It just ended up in a box on your porch, and then it happened. You know what I'm saying? It's people are like, yeah, that's everyone does that now. I'm like, yeah, but I think I thought of it before it actually was happening.
I just didn't do
anything.
And
then I came out. I'm like, huh? Yeah, I could see it. I think a few things I came up with were a little bit better, because I also thought that, that was back at the time. You could know trash pick. I had this whole network of kind of the smart home kind of thing. And it was really one of those ideas of, I just didn't want to think about it. I wanted to free up time. And I said, well, how can I free up time going to the store just seems like a very inefficient way to handle things. So anyhow, again, kudos on you for just kind of I think ideas are like a river, like you would kind of what you're saying is, and you see something floating by and you reach in and pick it up and you look at it. And a lot of people look at it and throw it back in the water going, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You did something about it, which is, like I said, good on you.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's like a lot of people believe things, but then when you just like something that comes to you, it's just like, all right, I'm just going to, I don't even know what it is. I don't know if anybody else likes it, but I think it's cool. And so I'm going to give it life. And I believe everybody has that same opportunity, but like you said, it's just doing it or not doing it.
I also think a lot sometimes what happens is, and I've noticed this, I don't know, it ebbs and flows, is you have to be careful who you ask advice to, because they're not necessarily on the same track as you and don't have the same experience as you. And I think people jump to the, I call it gray sky. They tell you all the reasons it won't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to be careful who you have in your counsel.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's one of my biggest things is like, make sure like it's the hardest thing to do is find people that are truly on your side. It's easy to find friends that are all for everything you do until you succeed in something that they didn't. And then all of a sudden they don't want you to be so successful anymore. It's interesting. It's as sad as it sounds, it's hard to find friends that are truly happy when you succeed. And those are the ones that you got to hang on to. And also people like, if you're going to do something stupid that like, okay, I think this is stupid and this is why. And then some, but they hold no judgment. And then if you want to continue forward, then go ahead and they'll go, all right, man, I'll back you. I'll see where this goes. But most people just live in fear. I'd say 90% of people are fear-based.
Well, there's a concept I got taught many years ago. What you're talking about is holding space for people. It's judgment-free.
Yeah.
I'm just holding space for you. I believe in you. I don't need to get it. I believe in you, and that's all I really need to invest in.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really cherish, and the other point is I cherish the people, and I've gotten much better at this. The number of people that they'll see somebody on a boat and the keys and they're like, oh, I wish I was there. Just be happy for the person. Just mm-hmm. be happy for them.
Yeah. Comparison is
you don't always have to interject yourself into the situation. Don't make it about you.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Comparison is, and competition is, it's very strange. I mean, yeah, like you said, it's just learn to be happy for other people. Don't want what they have and be happy for them when they get what they want, or even happier when they decide they want what they have. And I mean, it's great. I mean, there's no scarcity of opportunities out there. There's just one opportunity after the other. So when somebody gets one, I mean, good for them.
I was trying to think of what that comment was. Is the trick to the game is not, you know, getting all you want, is to trick yourself into all you want is what you have.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting thing. It's almost all those books, you know, you go from a Tim Ferriss book or whatever, just have gratitude. If you do,
yeah.
I don't even have to do a gratitude log. I'm just thankful. Thankful, be present. I mean, it sounds like everyone says that, but I can't tell you the number of people. They're across the table with me and they're someplace out. So they're thinking about the next thing. They're not actually here. They're never here.
Yeah.
They're always someplace out. So I'm like, how can you ever be happy? You're never anywhere. You're never with the person. You're never on the hike. You're never wherever. You're never here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, not a big spiritual guy, but I mean, these are things I've learned over the years and I did them wrong. I mean, I'm talking only from, not like I'm some guru. I just figured it out.
Well, that's how you know. It's like we all did it wrong. It's like the hardest thing for me was learning to unlearn all the things that I was taught and to figure out what I needed to do for myself. And it's like most people live their life through other people's eyes. And it's not a very fulfilling thing to ever do.
Yeah, that's true. Is seeking other people's approval and there's a whole rabbit hole stuff there. I know several, you know, quite a few people that they always got to be around other people because they're not comfortable in their own skin. They need the noise of social because they're not comfortable with themselves. Mm-hmm. And you can't tell them because if they don't want to see, I have the, I typically have, I'm a two question kind of person. Like if somebody has a problem, I ask two questions. One, do they recognize and admit they have a problem or something to be solved? If not, there's nothing I can do. I'm just going to wait.
Yeah, you can't help anybody that doesn't want to be helped.
And then the other part is, let's say they do admit. Do they want me? Will they accept my help? If not, I'm still done. It's hard sometimes to see someone and you're like, I could really help them, and you can't because they'll resent you for it. It's a maturity level to stand back and just, there's where the holding space comes in.
Yeah, you're right.
Space. I'm your biggest fan, but I can't help you because you don't recognize there's a problem and you don't want my help. And you have to be okay with that. Some people have kind of a Stockholm syndrome. They've tricked themselves into believing that they're happy where they're at. And I can't help them unsee that.
Yeah, it's just something they have to find on their own. And just like you said, just meet them where they're at and hold space for them in the meanwhile.
Yep. So what hammocks do you use? What's your go-to?
Oh, I don't know. I use a lot of Jason Flowers with Lahala, some Dutchware, and I've tried most of the good cottage vendors. Dream Hammock, I like my Dream Hammock. I even tried a Haven recently, and it's different, but I enjoy that. I just enjoy everybody's stuff that just goes and does their own thing. It's just I don't know. I haven't really come across a bad hammock. I mean, my very first hammock was a Clark, and I loved it, and I still do. And everybody always talks about, oh, I need a longer hammock and a bigger hammock. And Clarks are still, I believe, some of the smallest hammocks out there, but I find them to be still some of the most comfortable ones. And Dutch builds those now. And but I don't know. I haven't really found a bad hammock. And before like I got into cottage vendors, some of the Walmart hammocks were all right, and Eno's were all right. It's just it's like, I don't know. Anything's better to me than being in a hard bed. So
you sound like me. I seem to have made pretty much every hand. There's been a couple of super cheap work, but pretty much anything else I've got to work. And I just saw my first Clark ever this weekend. My buddy had one. We were at a hang, and I've wanted to see a Clark for years because I'm a hammock nerd. Obviously, I do the podcast and everything. And he goes, "I have one." So I'm like, "Well, let's set it up." And it did seem super short. God, I don't know if this is going to work, but it did.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. So he had a Clark. I think his was a 250. I seem to remember there's 250 and 270. It's whether you could access those under pockets you had outside the bug net, or you could do it from inside the hammock. So he must had a 250, and I thought it was fine. And this weekend I slept for the first time in a Lawson hammock, just something else to try, and a couple of tries to figure out, and I'm like, man, this is comfortable too. Like you said, I just enjoy it. I've been comfortable, or found a way to be comfortable in about every. Some are more forgiving and have more flexibility, but I mean, I started, my first hammock was one I picked up off Amazon, didn't pay a lot. I spent a year in it. Maybe not quite a year, maybe like 10 months, but because that first year I said, I'm going to learn how to do this hammock thing. So I spent every night outside for a year. And I think I spent about 10 months in that cheap Amazon one. And then I picked a Dutch half-wit used off the forums. And then I spent another, I don't know, months in that right through the winter, just trying to figure out how to do the insulation. And this is kind of one of the things I was talking to Barry about before, is I think the reason I was successful is deliberate practice. I just did it in my backyard, and there was many nights I'd come in at 1 a.m. because it didn't work. And then I would think about it, and I make an adjustment, and I try again. And it seems to be about, I think, the sweet spot with any hammock and any setup. It takes me about 10 nights. Some I can dial it in quicker, but to get everything just right, it takes me about 10 nights. And then I'm like, I have this dialed in. I can do anything I want with any particular setup. I even go hiking, my ultra light setup. I use a partial insulated thermarest pad. I don't even use an underquilt. And people poo poo pads all the time. I'm like, oh no, they work great. Just have to know how to use them.
Yeah, they do work great. Like what I think you can get them down to 30 below, and they don't even take up that much room, really.
No, what I liked about it is here in New Hampshire, last year was a very, very wet year. So if you were going to go out, you were starting in the rain, or was going to shower in the afternoon, or was going to rain overnight. And if you're out in the woods for multiple days and you are trying to keep your down dry, it was difficult. And mm-hmm. also, if you're out in the woods, if you get your down wet, you're done. You're toast. You're hiking out because you can't stay.
Yeah.
So what I did is I went out without any down. That Therm-a-Rest pad, I could probably lay in a puddle and it'd keep me warm.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be wet, but I'm warm. So I had that. I actually used a Therm-a-Rest thermal blanket, which I can get down to about 40 degrees. It's practically impervious. It's not impervious to water. I'm going to be warm even if it's wet. And mm-hmm. so I just had to figure it out. I had all this nice down gear and it stayed in my shed. I was using I typically with the pads, I use the women's pads because they typically have a higher R value.
Hmm.
And I'm not too proud to use a woman's pad. Sleeping pad, I don't care.
Me neither. It's like whatever works.
So in general, the women's pads, in fact, I have several pads I use in my hammocks and they're all women's because I have a higher R value.
I was unaware of that.
Yeah. Often you can get them I get a lot of my stuff used. Rarely do I buy anything new. You're looking around because I'm always testing something. And if it's like anything in life, if you're patient and you know what you're looking for and you're not in a hurry, you'll find a deal.
Yeah.
The worst time to buy something is if you need it, because then you have to pay whatever the price is.
Yeah. Never go grocery shopping when you're hungry.
There you go. So when you said you did elk hunting, do you hunt there right in Wyoming?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I usually just pack in about 11. Well, the place I've been going, it's been about 11 miles in. And I get my elk, and then I almost always hunt by myself. And then you debone it and carry the whole thing out. I mean, it's an experience and adventure every time for sure.
Yeah, you would talk before about how heavy your pack is.
Yeah, sometimes
it's just mind over matter. You know, you had to almost separate yourself from what you're doing because it was just, otherwise it'd be too hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times I know it's pushing 200 pounds and it's like because you can barely even stand up and now you got to walk 11 miles. So it's definitely mind over matter. People don't realize how tough they are. I feel like more people need to put themselves in those kind of situations where they can't quit. You know, it's like, you don't have an option. You're going to do this. And mm-hmm. they'll find that they can.
Yeah. We're waxing philosophical quite a bit, but there's a, where we think the edge is just our brain's factor of safety. There's more gears in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your body tries to keep you protected and keeps a kind of a safety zone. A lot of times I have some Army Ranger friends and stuff. And I used to think the stuff they put them through was just kind of like a fraternal thing to break them down. He's like, no, you don't know where your edge is. You got to find,
mm-hmm.
and not only do you need to know where it is, but you need to believe it's out there. And the only way to do it is to do it. So I've done that. Probably not to quite to your level. I think I've gone out with, you know, you forget something and you have to figure it out.
Yeah.
You're 7 miles back and it's snowing and have to just got to figure it out.
Yeah. And like when I camp, when I'm by myself, I'll hardly ever use fire. So it's just nice to get by that because a lot of people, if they can't get fire, they're done.
Mm-hmm.
They just lose their mind. So if you just learn to not rely on things like that, then when you have them, they're luxuries. Then you just learn to be more careful in your actions. Like don't walk until you get sweaty, or you know, take off layers of clothes before you get sweaty. Just think in advance. It's better to be cold, you know, while you're walking than to get where you're at and be wet, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah, that happens quite a bit here. And you go out in the fall or something, you gotta be careful. Every season has its own challenges, whether it's in the summer and it's, you know, 95 and 100% humidity, That's a completely different challenge than being out and it's like 32 and it's drizzling. And one of the things I learned is a lot of times I don't wear like a rain jacket or anything. I wear kind of funny. I wear wool base layer and then I wear something like a little bit of a windproof something, usually in the core, but I'll wear a cashmere sweater. I just embrace the rain.
Yeah.
'Cause you wear a rain jacket. Sure, it keeps the water out, but it also keeps the water in. You're going to end up wet one way or the other, so you might as well just, and I'll hike over mountains, and I'm just wearing it's an old preppy, someone threw it away, it had holes in it or something, and I'm like, that's a really nice wool sweater, can I have it? And I use it to hike with.
I love wool. I mean, that's all I, like, merino wool base layers and the old knit wool sweater, a lot of times, like, that's my go-to. The one thing I'll always have is that rain jacket that just fits in your pocket. It's like, 'cause that blocks the wind and it'll keep the water off you. But like you said, you have to pay attention to not get sweaty underneath it though.
Yeah.
But if you have, I mean, it's amazing just keeping the wind off you, how warm you are.
Yep. I have a windproof fleece that I've had for years. It's not waterproof. But again, I think people think they need to be dry to be warm. That's not true at all.
Not with wool.
No. Wool seems to wick it somehow, and then it drips out the bottom. I don't know how it works.
Yeah, you can be soaking wet in wool and still be warm. It's weird. But I still prefer to stay dry as I can.
I'll stay dry if I can, but it depends on what I'm doing. Some of the jackets I had with wet out, and I just realized recently you can restore things with like Nick wax. So there's a two-step process. You wash it in a Nick wax wash and then you do another cycle with, and it will, I don't know what it does. It makes it so all the water beads up again and it won't wet out like it. After a while, it seems whatever makes it bead up gets worn out and you can restore it. Oh, I'm going to fix all my gear. So,
yeah, it's interesting that I'm even doing what I'm doing, because how I grew up is I just go into the mountain, follow animals around all night, and wherever, like if I was following a herd of elk, like wherever I ended up that night, I just sleep on the ground underneath the tree, and most times I didn't even have anything with me. Maybe I think after a while I started carrying a little tarp to cover myself up with, but then it's like I didn't even realize that people bought, like, got this serious about gear for real, because it's like my whole life I never used it. And then figure out it's this whole big industry. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I did a lot of, for lack of a better word, cowboy camp.
Yeah, that's why I grew up.
Laid on the ground, and then I'd bring some foam or something to lay on the ground, and then over time, then I would bring a sleeping bag. Eventually, I come from a trade family. So I'd have a piece of Tyvek or something.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, laying on the ground, it's not the most comfortable thing. And I just said, it's the price of doing business. You know, it is what it is. And then someone had get me a hammock for Christmas or something, and I didn't use it. And in the spring, it was a nice day. I was out back raking the lawn, and I'm like, I'm just going to string up this hammock and see what it's all about. And I laid in it, and 45 minutes later, I woke up. I'm like, I think there's something to this hammock thing.
Yeah, I did the same thing. You just conk out and don't even realize you fell asleep.
And I didn't wake up sore. I had no hot spots. It took me a while to figure out how to get it right, because, you know, the hammock that someone purchased me, they probably got it for $20 at Home Depot or whatever they did. And, of course, I didn't string it up right to begin with. I didn't put a sag in it, all the things.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it was enough. I'm like, there's something to this. I'm going to figure this out. And then I tripped on, I went Googling for hammocks and stuff. Eventually, I tripped into hammock forums, and then I went down the rabbit hole. You know, there's years and years and years and years and years worth of knowledge in there.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to get absorbed in a subject when I get into it. And then I just figured it out, watched a bunch of Shug videos, and then I ended up with a Dutch halfwit, and now I probably own 40 different hammocks of different types. And, you know, some people will sell them off, but what I like to do is go back to old hammocks, because I had an idea what I thought was good, and then I go back a year later, and I'm like, this isn't quite as comfortable as I thought it was. And you start tweaking it and figuring out, oh, I was stringing it up wrong the whole time. Now I get it. Because somebody will post something and they'll give you an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyhow.
Yeah. That's what's neat about hammocking, though, is there's no right or wrong way for everybody. It's all very personalized for everybody. So that 30-degree sag, it's like, all right, well, that's a good starting point, and then find what you like from there. It's like nothing set in stone, you know?
Right, right. You think your Yovo gear is going to take off and pay the bills, or is it just going to be one of your hustles?
Oh, no. I mean, it's doing great. I mean, we sell a lot. And Kristen does. She does all the social media, and she's like the best when it comes to like customer service. And I mean, just great. If somebody like messages us at 10 at night, she's going to respond to them right away, which is amazing. And that's what I feel is like very important is customer service. And I don't feel like anybody has any better customer service. And we're always listening and evolving. So it's like some people like are pretty, I don't know, abrasive, I guess you would say. And it might get to some people, but I just view it all as say whatever you want and I'll process it. And if you have a point, then I'll address that point. And it's like, we're only going to get better is what I'm saying. Every year we're going to, and, I don't know. I ticked a lot of boxes this year. We got a lot of really neat stuff coming. And, but if you think what we have out there on the market is all we got, I can build anything for you. You tell me your parameters and I almost guarantee I can hit them. It's whether it's weight and strength or whatever it is. I mean, if you want a 5-pound stand that can hold 500 pounds, I can build it. Just because it's not on the market, and I will. I mean, if you want a custom stand, I'll do a custom stand for you. But and then I just see it's growing and getting more and more and more because we just listen. It's not really about us. It's about giving people what they're asking for. And of course, you're not going to hit the nail on the head with your very first try. So, but what's hard is. You can make it longer, you can make it taller, you can make it hold more weight, you can make it lighter. I mean, it's hard to find a good solid middle ground just to start. And so that's all we did. You just start and then get all your feedback and then you go from there and then try the next thing and see where that ends up. But it's always just about helping people. And I mean, that's always been my goal. It's to provide a freedom for people to experience hammocking everywhere in different ways.
Right.
Like, even if I didn't make money, I'd still do it just because it's, I mean, that's initially why, what I said when I started it. It's like, you know, I just want to give people experiences and like, you couldn't hammock there before, now you can. It's like, so I don't know. I see it's, we're not going to go away. Like we're just going to keep adding products and figuring out more ways to evolve and to give people what they want or maybe what they didn't even realize they wanted yet. I'm excited about it. It's going to be fun to see what happens.
It's fun to hear how you say that because I have, you know, people that work. I work in IT project management. Someday I'll get out and do something more fun, but it's paying the bills right now. But there's people that they have insomnia and other things, and I know I can't get them outside. They think I'm nuts because I go out and sleep outside when it's freezing. And I'm like, it's really not bad. It's really what we're meant to do.
It feels amazing.
We're meant to be outside. We're meant to be, for one way or another, whether we're hunting or we're gathering something, we're wired to be communal and outside. So when you can be communal and outside, it sets you up right. You put your back into a pattern of dawn and dusk. And I know I can't get them outside, but I say sleep. If you want to put your sleep pattern back, just try this for me. Find the east side of your house and open your curtain so that the sun streams in on your face and just put yourself back in it. These people have so far removed yourself from all natural rhythms of the world. I have no doubt that you have insomnia. Your body doesn't know how to right itself and I can't get them outside. I mean, Somebody, I'm going to crack somebody eventually and they're going to break down and go outside. I did that to a dental hygienist though, a couple of years ago. Just my boyish enthusiasm. She booked a camping trip. She went to a to a campground, couldn't wait till I came back, and she was so excited of how much fun she had. She goes, I wouldn't have believed it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to make anybody do what they don't do, but it rubs off on them. They're like, you're so happy, and I'm going to go try it. That's what I'm trying to do with a couple of people at work. They have migraines and insomnia, and I'm leaving open, you get a medical leave. But put yourself in touch with harmony again. At least try it. Mm-hmm. And I said, I know you're not going to sleep outside. One person had a screened-in porch. I'm like, go sleep on the screened-in porch. Take some blankets. And I'm like, what's the worst that's going to happen? Do it on a Friday night. The worst thing that's going to happen, you'll chilly by 1 a.m. in the morning and go back in.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a failure. A couple weeks later, I know it works for me, because when I get a little, that year I spent the entire year outside, there's just something about the rhythm outside, the birds waking up in the morning, there's sounds. And if I'm inside, I can sleep in till sometimes 10 in the morning. If I'm outside, I'm up. I don't need an alarm clock. I just get up.
Yeah.
And I'm not a morning person, except mm-hmm. if I'm outside.
Yeah.
I'm outside, yeah. I get into the... Anyhow, I think there's something... I think that's what a lot of us hammock people, campers, think, reiterating. I think we're supposed to be communal and outside. There was at a campground one time, somehow a teardrop camper was next to us all, and we're all in hammocks, and it intrigued them. And that's what they had said, is we're sharing food, we're around the fire. It just all worked. And I think mm-hmm. that... I think sometimes we get... There are some people in the community that are really keen on, they got to get their base weight down and they've got to get this perfect piece. I don't think you do.
Yeah.
I think you're overthinking.
Well, that's the thing. They're thinking. I mean, that's the human condition, is they're always in their head. It's like we've forgotten that we belong in nature. It's like everybody's going out into nature. They're going to go try this. That's where you belong. You're part of it. You're not above it. You're part of it. You're an animal that just happens to have a more advanced thought process. I totally agree. It's just where we belong. And for some reason, somewhere along the line, we decided we're totally separate. I mean, going into nature at night or anytime should not be a scary thing. It's like, I've never felt threatened in nature ever. It's too bad that a lot of people are afraid of that. But like you said, the more they get out there, though, the more they're going to understand it's not scary. It's like nothing really wants to hurt you.
No, very, very few. There are only a few situations that, I don't even say they're scary, but you have to have a little thought. I leave open some, there's some places where it'd be a little nerve-wracking. I mean, if I went to a place where there was big predators, or I think the Amazon will kick my ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always wonder about myself. It's like, because jungles, like I'm used to mountains and stuff, but jungles would be a different kind of ball game.
Yeah.
But,
and then once in a while, there'll be a rabid animal that people get all upset about animals. And I'm like, well, how do you know which animals to fear? And I'm like, it's real simple to me. You should fear the animals that are not fear. They don't have fear of you. Pretty simple. Any animal that doesn't fear you, fear it. There's something not right, or you're in an area deep in the Arctic or something where they don't know humans, so you're just on the... But I'm like, you're never going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these people barely go outside in the winter. They're not going to be anywhere there's any serious danger. I've been out back, and I have my little piece of property is like a sanctuary. I'm friends with the possums and the woodchucks and the skunks. I always joke, you know what you do when a skunk goes under your hammock? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. But actually, I'll feed the animals with some, I have cat food and stuff. And there was a possum, unfortunately got hit by a car last year, but it had a kind of a bum leg. So every once in a while, I'd notice it in the back, and I'd feed it and let it kind of, I have a little garbage shelter that I put the bins in, and I would take one of the bins out and put a blanket and give it some food just to let it heal up. So it felt pretty comfortable. I mean, it's nothing. They're not pets, so I don't go pet them, mm-hmm. but I feel I could.
Yeah.
So, and then you had talked about in the woods that you don't have a fire. Only recently have I done any kind of cooking in the woods, because one of the things that always gave away a human is fire. You can smell smoke for miles. So I'd go out and I'd never make a fire. I wouldn't even bring anything. And then I did start breaking down. I made some cat can stoves or whatever so you could heat some water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now I have an MSR stove that I'm toying with, but it's more because I'm a gear geek. I'm just trying to figure things out.
Like I'll bring a jet boil or something just because it's easy and you can boil some water and cook some dehydrated food. But as far as warmth, you know, like worrying about warmth and light, it's like it's typically not a concern. And I'll go out when it's like I've gone into the mountains and places I've never been in the middle of snowstorms where you can't hardly even see where you're going. It's just knowing that you're going to be okay. As long as you don't do anything stupid, you're going to be fine.
Here in New Hampshire, I'm friends with search and rescue, and typically anybody that either gets in serious trouble or dies, it's one, lack of preparation, lack of deliberate practice, but often it's more than that. It's just a series of mistakes. They just didn't stop. You know, we did that. There was a hike that went kind of poorly last year, and you know, once your season, that whole year I spent outside, I got very calm. I know I was going to be fine. The guys that were with me didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So we hiked out, got to a place where there was a campsite, which means we weren't too far from civilization. And it's probably about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And they're like, well, let's hike out. I'm like, we aren't going anywhere. We've made enough mistakes today. We're bedding down here so that we can eat, we can regroup, we can think, and then we'll hike out tomorrow, which was good because the way we thought we wanted to get out wasn't the way to get out.
Yeah.
It would have gotten worse. Would it have killed us? I don't think so. But I don't know that for sure. You twist an ankle. Nobody knew where we were. None of us had cell signal. We didn't have InReach. That was one of the things that happened years ago. I was in trouble. I probably was in trouble, but I was on the edge and I started having a mantra. Nobody's coming. Save yourself.
Yeah.
Nobody.
That's life in general.
It's amazing. It sounds like a very pessimistic mantra, but no, it's empowering.
Yeah.
Figure it out. Nobody's coming. You got to lay down here and die, or you're going to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someday can happen to any of us. I won't make it. It's all right. I lived.
Yeah.
There's not trying to get all these quotes, but you know, the saddest thing is people who aren't alive while they're still living.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
They've already given up.
Yeah. And then here's another quote.
There we go.
What the main thing that hurts people is shame. So when they get lost, they concentrate on, oh man, what I'm stupid and I should never have done that, instead of just accepting where you're at and surviving.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the hardest thing for a human to accept is being human. It's very, very odd.
Yeah. Well, there's some of that, and I'm just dovetailing what you just said. It's about being present. And I got a lot of life lessons, you know, dovetailing back to where we started this conversation. When you're in a ski race and you don't do one of your turns right, it's over. Move on.
Mm-hmm.
You literally have to forget about it. It literally no longer matters, because if you even for a fraction of a second analyze that in your head, then you're going to mess up another one and another one, and you're skiing out and you lost the race.
Yeah.
And so what we do is we train a lot. I'm very big on deliberate practice because one of our mantras for skiing, and I guess it's good in life, is I don't think people rise to the occasion. I think they fall to their training. So if you typically, you don't do more than what you've trained. And I think a lot of, like I said back, I learned lessons in the ski racing. When I was out in the woods, I fell to my training. I just turned my brain off. We walked right out. When you're lost in the woods, and I don't think it works everywhere. It works in my area. I was always taught, because I grew up around hunters, if you're lost in the woods, you find a body of water and follow it out until you find something man-made.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works here. We didn't know where we were, so we walked. We found some water. We followed it out the best we could. We came upon a human campsite. We bedded down, got up in the morning. Lo and behold, we went to get water to make some coffee and tea, and there's a sign that we missed the night before. It says, point it. Here's how you get out.
Yeah, here you can go probably 50, 60 miles and not end up anywhere.
Yeah, that's, I'm a creature of my environment. If I came out your way, I'd go with you, because I wouldn't know. But here I can understand the weather. I know what's gonna, it's just because I've grown up in this environment. I'm a product of this area and this microcosm. You take me to Florida and I get lost. You take me to Arizona in the desert, I'd be lost, because that's not where my, you know, my experience lies. I go with someone like you, who's a local. Have you teach me?
Yeah. Well, I've never been lost, but I've not known where I was for a few days, but I was always right exactly where I was, and I was always okay with that.
Yeah.
wasn't sure how to always get to the where I thought I was supposed to be, but I think, you know, when I was younger, I got lost, and it doesn't feel good. It's like you're scared, and it's like, oh, I need to be here. But if you just realize you're not really lost, you're just not where you need to be, then it's just a different way to explain something to yourself. So you're calm, and you have your faculty, and you'll be okay.
And over time, the more times you're successful being lost, the better in the future you are.
Yeah. Just know that you have everything to survive, and just realize that even if you're uncomfortable, you're still going to live.
Yeah, that's another thing that's good about the, you know, the experience of hammocking. I was out one night last year. My gear, I knew exactly where the edge of my gear was, and I slept cold. I wasn't shivering. Wasn't the most comfortable night, but I knew exactly where I was, and so I slept cold. But I knew where I was. I knew I wasn't shivering. I had eaten, so my body was generating. What I made sure I did is had some snacks in my pocket, so when I went up to go pee in the middle of the night, you ate a Snickers bar. This is one way to heat yourself up, is to fuel it. But it was confidence that I knew I'd be fine. You know, I wasn't bad off at all. It's not how I'd sleep every night. But.
Yeah, we've all had nights like that.
Yeah, that was the trip. People see the videos, and they're like, especially the tent campers, like, the worst part of the day is when you get up. They're saying that the worst time is that you have to deflate your air mattress, the comfort. I'm like, oh, no, that's not the worst. The worst is when you've been hiking for 3 days and you need to keep some dry clothes and you need to put your wet clothes back on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, let's just look at this generationally. So, and look at my grandpa, for instance. He rode the pipelines on horseback. Now they fly over him to check the pipeline. So he put over 50,000 miles horseback just riding pipeline and through blizzards and rain and in the middle of nowhere. And that's just what he loves to do. And sometimes he had a place to, like, there's a homestead close where he could go stay, and sometimes not. But so they just stuck out there in nature, no choice. And he loved it. And then you listen to go up to my dad's generations, and they're just dumb, getting drunk up elk hunting, pass out drunk in a snowstorm off the back of a horse, wake up under a 2 foot of snow or a foot and a half of snow. And that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the mentality. I don't know what it is. I wish people were just more okay with their situations and enjoyed, you know, their surroundings and what's happening to them. It's I feel like everything's just got so serious.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm always trying to find an example. You know, I remember going hiking with a girl. We were going through, and she was all about getting to, you know, you're hiking to the top of a mountain for the vista. And I'm like, you're missing 95% of the hike.
Yeah. My brother-in-law actually told me about this guy he met in Montana. He passed him on the trail, and he was walking up the hill backwards. And he's like, why are you doing that? He's like, because you can't see anything when you're walking forward. You go walk backwards, you see everything, you know, when you're walking uphill.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's how that dude hiked the trails. I think that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
just doing his own
thing. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
The only time I've turned around is, if you remind me, is when I get to trail junctions or I'm out in some part of the woods where I'm going to take some. I always go a few feet down the trail I'm going to go when I turn around, and I really study, what does it look like if I had to come back It's amazing if you turn yourself 180 degrees, it looks very different. It looks nothing like you came up.
Yeah.
You think you could recognize it. Like, no, you really can't.
Yeah, but you're totally right, Chris. Everybody's going somewhere instead of being somewhere. That's what it is.
I think you just said it better than anything I come up with. I'm going to steal that.
Have at it.
I think people have recognized the problem. I don't think they've figured out the solution is that, you know, people will go out to dinner and you have four different people at the table and they're all on their cell phones. They're not with each other.
Mm-hmm.
They're somewhere else.
Yep.
They're all four of them are someplace else. They're not,
yep.
None of them are here.
Well, there's nothing to figure out, really. It just is. And you accept it or you don't recognize it. It's like you could try to figure things out all day long, but there's really no solution.
Right.
It's like if you go looking for it, you can't find it, but it can find you.
I also think we have to get reacquainted with a different pace. We don't have to fill every moment with something. You can go just sit. I enjoy I don't know what you call them is my favorite overnighters is I get out of work. I take a bag. I'll go in the woods, hike someplace, you know, up the trail and I can hike the busiest trail. Everybody's hiking out. I'm hiking in. I get to the top of the vista or whatever. And I'll spend 12 to 14 hours up there rather than the 20 minutes that most people sleep right out on the open. I see the stars. I see the sunset. I see the sunrise. I get up in the morning, have a breakfast, and then I hike out. Everybody's hiking back in again. I'm hiking back out. I had the whole top of the mountain to myself for 14 hours.
Yeah.
The bang for the buck. It's just peaceful. You go up there and people are like, well, what do you do up there? I'm like, nothing. Just look, breathe, listen. Watch the sunset and how the colors change. And now I can start to see stars and I see the moon coming, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you actually feel it. It's like, that's the trick with most things too. It's like, you can think about it and try to figure things out. But if you don't feel it, you don't experience.
Right.
And it's like, everybody can look at something and say, that's beautiful, but they don't know for sure until you feel it. But
I think you almost robbed, sometimes you rob the thing. We don't have words for everything. I mean, if you and I go see a sunrise, there's no words to describe it. There's no pictures. It is what it is.
You
try to wrap around it, but just by trying to put a picture or words around it, you're limiting it, putting in a box. It's a representation of the thing. It's not the thing.
Yeah, you have to feel it. Because there are no words. I'm right with you. I feel like there's way too many words. Like, there's lots of words that do no good.
Right. Well, it goes back to my hunter-gatherer thing. Is they say that, just my thing, is men use a lot less words. I'm like, that's because we were hunting and we talk in hand signals and pointing and just feel it. I mean, don't have to go back generations. It happened with my uncle, my dad, and my grandfather go out in the woods and they just knew what each other was doing. They'd go an entire day and not talk to each other, but they all knew what each other was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And animals
are the same way. It's like when people are hunting, they're like, man, all I had to do is take one more step and I would have had it. It's like, yeah, that's going to happen to you a million times because they can feel you. It's like if you were all right with yourself and calm, they would have took that other step. It's mm-hmm. like you and your animals that you play with and like, it's, they know you're not going to hurt them. And, even another thing is maybe it's even hunting wise, it's, I hate to kill anything. I really do. But what it is it's an energy exchange. It's like, and that's just how nature works. It's like, yeah, it's ugly and it's not enjoyable, but it's respectful.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can go to the store and buy this thing, but you still killed it, whether you think you did or not. It's dead because you were going to consume it.
Yep.
So it's like, don't let other people do your dirty work. Just do it. Like this, the elk I shot last year, it's like I spot and stalked it bow hunting and it saw me. Before I saw it, and most often you'll never get a shot at it, but it looked me in the eye and I looked it in the eye and it took two steps and stood perfectly broadside and said, all right, do a good job. And it's not a good feeling. I mean, but it's right and it's respectful. And that's the circle of life. There's no place to hide. That's what I like about Mother Nature. You can tell yourself lies in town all you want. You go into Mother Nature, you tell yourself lies, you die.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or you get hurt really bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel we're missing that like greatly in our society.
Mm. No, I think you're right on there. And the meat you get in a store or the chicken or whatever is, if anybody does a little research on how you dispatch an animal and how that chicken they had was dispatched, it's pretty horrific.
Yeah, and I also believe like how that animal was raised is if there's traumas, it's stored in its meat. I mean, I think like you eat an animal that lived a good life and lived right, and you take its life and you make that. It's an agreement. It's an energy exchange, just like a tree knows that it grows and dies and falls over and feeds the other trees, and then it becomes part of, like, one tree becomes all trees. I mean, that's how life works. And people are they're just so afraid of confrontation and ugliness that I don't know how to explain it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there was a study, or someone figured out, I don't know how they figured this out, but that when a tree is dying, it will send out its nutrients through the root system, that the whole forest is connected.
Yeah.
And as it's dying, it will send, it basically gives all of its good to its neighbors and the network. There's actually times that you have, that logging hurts a forest because it robs the tree ecosystem. It's above my mental pay grade.
Mm-hmm.
But you took away the elders in a way that damaged the forest, and it'll take it time to recover because all that's left is the juveniles and the nutrients are gone. This is that you're telling me that the trees have kind of a consciousness, and they're like, no, it's not quite like that, but there's more to it. One other thing you were talking about is the traumas in an animal. I have a couple of friends. They have what's called the one bad day farm. And so all their animals are pets. They're loving everything, but most all their animals have one bad day.
Yep.
And even up to the moment that they're dispatched, they're loving to the animal.
Yeah.
And that's
respectful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how nature.
So it's not even a one bad day. It's basically one bad minute or 5 minutes. I mean, and they have a processing truck, and what they do is whatever, they take the animal away in a way that the animal is comfortable with. It's happened before. They don't know that this one is different than anything else. It's very little trauma to the rest of the animals. And they're right in the same subscription mind thought as you just said, is they're very, very, very nice to their animals. There's still food. So I like how you say it's an energy exchange. But they call it the one bad day farm, and I think it's awesome.
Yeah, because my body personally does not run on vegetables. There's no way. And great for people that, you know, if it makes them healthy and they can live a good active life being a vegetarian, that's great. But like there's tons of people that just can't do that. I mean, mm-hmm. I need an animal to take a lot of things and eat it that I couldn't eat because my body just wouldn't be able to process it, but theirs can. And they take that and they make it dense. So instead of having to eat 15 pounds of this vegetable, I can eat 1 pound of meat and get what I need. And I can be strong and healthy. And then that's just how life works. I mean, it's just like bears or wolves or coyotes or any other kind of predator. It's just, they're necessary. And but we are not separate from the ecosystem. We are part of it, and that's our role. We're just so far removed from that belief, it feels like, in society anymore. It's like I don't look down on anybody for eating vegetables, and that's all they eat. I'm all for that, but they also have to respect that there's plenty of us out here that eat meat. That's how we live, and it's an energy exchange, and it's almost a disrespect to refuse to eat meat. It's almost saying like Mother Nature is wrong, you know?
Well, the joke I've heard recently is you're a vegetarian one time removed or whatever.
So, that's what they call a bad hunter.
Yeah, I'm coming all these, you know, I believe everything what you're saying is, but then I have some friend that had a, what was his t-shirt? I love animals too, right next to my potatoes and veg or something. So.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, you know, that statement is only there because there's people telling them that what they like to do with and what's good for their body is wrong. It's like, you right. eat meat. So that's obviously in response to that, which right. should, you know, ideally just be unnecessary. It's like, oh, you're a plant eater. Good for you. Oh, you like to eat meat. Good for you. It's like, and that's how life should be lived. It's like this controlling everybody thing is so strange.
Yeah. Well, this has been fun. I appreciate you chatting with me for the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Right back at you. I feel like we didn't get to talk about hammocks a lot. But
yeah. We'll have to do a follow up on the, well, we talked about the hammock stand and I wanted to give you a big shout out for the Yobo stuff. I'm glad I hear it's going well.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, that's our goal. We don't really look to make a living off the hammock community. What we've been trying to do is build the hammock community and to educate more people about hammocking and make it easier and more accessible for them. So, I mean, it's, and anytime you try to introduce people to new things, it's typically not a fast growth scenario. So it's ongoing and it's going to be consistent. So I know we're going to get more people like you said, get more people outside doing stuff they can enjoy and improving their lifestyle.
And that's the show for this month. As always, you can find the podcast at hyohpodcast.com. And for more information on the podcast, you can go to the Facebook page. If you like what you hear, please consider giving us a positive review on iTunes or wherever you get the podcasts. This podcast is a labor of love, and your support is very much appreciated. If you'd like to help support the podcast with a donation, please go to hyohpodcast.com/donate for a one-time donation. I would like to thank those who support the podcast month to month, and if you enjoy the podcast, please consider supporting the podcast via the Patreon page. Please tell your friends about the podcast and be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. And as always, I would love to hear from you with questions, comments, and show ideas. You can email me anytime at chris@hyohpodcast.com. And finally, a special thank you to Ben Sound for our podcast music and ITX for the hosting the podcast. As always, thank you for listening. See you next month.